Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Stunning announcement today out of Pelicans camp, as David Griffin has said that the team was mutually chosen to part ways with head coach Stan Van Gundy. So now the Pelicans are in the midst of a coaching search, and now we bring in to talk about it our friend from the Locked On Pelicans podcast, Jake Madison. Jake, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Happy to be on talking some coaching search for the Pelicans now.
Yeah, so David Griffin did a Zoom chat at 3 o'clock. Full disclosure, I wasn't able to be on it because I was on my way here to host the show here at 4, so I didn't get to hear what he had to say. What did Griff say in terms of why they chose to make this decision and perhaps even why they waited so long after the season to make this decision?
You know, I'll be honest, he didn't really say a whole lot, and he didn't get into any specifics about why they decided to move on from Stan Van Gundy and what's being described as a mutual parting of ways. And while that's somewhat true, this is probably closer to a firing than them just saying, okay, no, this isn't working out, we're all going our separate ways, though there definitely is some of it to that. He basically said it came down to a philosophical difference between the front office and the team and what Stan Van Gundy was trying to do, without getting into specifics because of that. You know, reading between the lines, you could tell that Stan Van Gundy didn't really vibe with some of the players, and they really had a tough time with him as their head coach this past season. I think the front office disliked that he was a little bit too over-reliant on guys like Eric Bledsoe instead of letting some of the young players go out and play. And that just led to them looking at this and realizing this wasn't the guy to lead the franchise going forward, that if they wanted to win basketball games and, you know, to a degree impress Zion Williamson, this wasn't the person to be at the helm. And I think ultimately that's why they decided to make the decision. I don't think this was an easy choice to make. It's very, very rare that you see an NBA head coach leaving the team after just 1 year in charge. And so because of that, I'm sure they didn't want to rush into a decision to part ways and wanted to make sure that this truly was the best thing for the franchise that's going to set them off in the direction that they need to get into to try and win basketball games and have playoff success. And I think that's ultimately why this didn't happen immediately at the end of the regular season.
Now, Jake, when you look at David Griffin, executive vice president, he's pulling the trigger. How important this next hire is, because I think it's monumental. The reason why I bring that up is I look at the Pelicans. Are they heading into the lottery now? And we all know, we don't know what's going to happen. But a 31-41 record this season was nearly identical to a 30-42 record they posted last season. But they finished 13 and 11th place in the Western Conference since selecting Zion. So now, if David Griffin hires a coach and we have the same song and dance, 30 wins and maybe 10 more losses are around that range, I mean, then come on, don't we have to hold them accountable or what?
You know, when you look at kind of the mess and the state that the Pelicans are in, it's due to David Griffin, right? Look, Stan Van Gundy wasn't great last season. We can be upfront and honest about it. It was a bad coaching hire.
Right.
He did not do a good job. But would any coach have really had success with the roster that we saw last year, with a lack of three-point shooting, a lack of guys that are really committed on the defensive side of the ball? You know, when David Griffin looks at getting this coaching hire right, it's not just going to take a coaching hire that's going to turn the fortunes of this franchise around. You need a pretty big overhaul of the roster. The good news is they have the assets to do it, but this is the roster that David Griffin built. So when I look at this. I see some scapegoating of Stan Van Gundy, but ultimately this was the decision that David Griffin made. This is the roster that David Griffin built. So this is kind of at his feet, I think, the mess that this franchise looks at themselves being in right now. So I agree with you that, you know, eventually he is going to need to be held accountable. And this is a guy that has won an NBA title with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He's done it in a small market. He did it with very limited assets. He had a lot of goodwill and benefit of the doubt coming into this organization with the decisions that he wanted to have made. But with the such a disappointing year that the Pelicans had this past season, I think he's lost a lot of that goodwill. I think he's lost a lot of that benefit of the doubt. And now you look at this decision on who they're going to hire to be the next head coach, who Zion's next head coach is going to be. You could argue that this is as big of a decision as this franchise has ever had to face. This is probably the most crucial decision in the history of the Pelicans. It sounds hyperbolic, but I don't think it is. The fate of Zion potentially rests with this coaching decision.
Right.
So they absolutely need to get this one, you know, 1,000% right.
I said this earlier in the season. I said it again earlier today. I agree with you. I think that this is the coaching hire that's going to decide the long-term fortunes of this team as it's made up right now. I think the Stan Van Gundy hire, if it didn't work out, I do applaud the decision to move on from it quickly rather than doubling down and saying, oh, no, he's still the guy, and wasting another year of Zion Williamson with a coach that's not ultimately going to work out. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it's a silver lining, right? It's a silver lining that at least they realized they made a mistake and ripped the Band-Aid off, and that you had ownership's blessing on, you know, now paying potentially three coaches is what you're going to be doing next season. That's not an easy thing to stomach. It doesn't excuse making the mistake in the first place, right? You know, you can still, you know, drunk drive and crash a car and then be like, oh, yeah, my bad, I shouldn't have done that. You still drunk drove and crashed the car, right? It's not quite at that level of dire consequences, I guess. But you still made the mistake in the first place. It doesn't take away from that, even if you're willing to try and correct the mistakes that you did. And right now, the stakes are pretty high. You could hear from Zion Williamson that he wasn't particularly happy with the way last season went. You heard how cold Brandon Ingram spoke about Stan Van Gundy in his end-of-season media availability. And this isn't even factoring in that Zion calls him Coach Gundy, not Coach Van Gundy. What does that say about their relationship to a certain degree when that's the case? So all of this is just, you look at it, and it just feels like it's a bit of a mess. So I'm glad they realize it's a mess, because that's the first step towards fixing the mess. But they still made a mess in the first place, and I dislike that they had to go down this path.
Now, you know, Jake, so going forward, who is on your wish list? You know, you're like a veteran like Chauncey Billups, and then you look at a female head coach, Weatherspoon, and you can go a number of different directions. Who would you target? Because when you look at it, the Pels aren't the only one that are looking for a head coach. Isn't it like five or six NBA teams that are also looking for the right guidance for their franchise?
Yeah, you know, there's a number of teams out there looking for head coaches right now, potentially more to come. You never know, including the Wizards, who kind of made that announcement today. But I do think the Pelicans job could be one of the more appealing out there. Instead of going with specific names, and you'll hear some of them. There's going to be David Vanderpool, who I'm pretty high on. There's Ime Udoka as well. There's a guy like Charles Lee from the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, and Teresa Witherspoon internally. We've also heard about Fred Vincent internally as well. All people that I think would be fine head coaches. You know, I've been asked a lot of, do they go with an offensive guy? Do they go with a defensive guy? You know, do you go with a player's coach? Do you go with someone a little bit more disciplinarian? None of that matters, I think. The person who's going to step into this head coaching job and be the most successful is going to be the person that can reach these players. Can you get through to Zion Williamson? Can you build a meaningful connection with him, with Brandon Ingram, with maybe Lonzo Ball, with Jackson Hayes, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Kyra Lewis Jr.? Can you build that meaningful connection and make them want to become better basketball players? If you can do that, you will be successful in this role here in New Orleans. If you can't do that, I don't care how good your X's and O's are. And I think that's really the number one trait that this team needs to look at when making that hire. The people that kind of fit that mold, I think, are a lot of those younger lead assistants in the league that have worked one-on-one with star players. Damian Lillard speaks very highly about David Vanderpool. You hear Giannis glowingly speak about Charles Lee and the work that he's done in Milwaukee. all of that stuff, I think, is what you look for, and those are the qualities that you look for in your next head coaching candidate. And Teresa Witherspoon is an example of that. Though David Griffin kind of distanced the idea of her really being a serious candidate, you hear Zion Williams speak glowingly about her. The rest of the players rave about her. I think that's the type of person you want, someone that can get the most out of these players. The X's and O's can fall into place. The rotation can fall into place. All of that is a really important thing. But getting through to the players and getting them motivated and playing hard night in, night out is the number one quality I want to find in a head coach. I think that's an assistant that's done it with these star players before.
Where do you think the disconnect came in between Van Gundy and the players? Do you think it's an age thing? Do you think it's because he was out of the game for three years as a broadcaster? Or is it another issue altogether? Where do you think the disconnect was?
There's a couple of things. You know, one, he's more of a disciplinarian, and coming from a guy like Alvin Gentry, who was the kind of opposite of that, maybe this was just a little bit hard for them to stomach. You heard Stan Van Gundy throw his players, and rightfully so, under the bus in a number of post-game interviews this season when games were lost after double-digit leads. We heard that all of the time. Those players needed to be better, but maybe it shouldn't have been the message that he was trying to deliver to the media and almost making them look bad, and I think that was part of it. And look, the COVID protocols and this just slog of a season was part of it too. You're playing games every other day. You didn't really have time to practice. You didn't have time to go out to dinner as a group or anything like that, or you weren't allowed to go out for, you know, as a dinner as a group and things like that. I don't know if it would have been easy for any head coach to really succeed in any of those type of scenarios. So circumstances did him no favor as well.
You talked about a difference of philosophy that Griffin talked about. Did he elaborate on that at all? Because it seems like you would hire a guy who has the same philosophy that you're looking at in terms of your vision of the team. Is it really all the fact that, you know, he continued to give Bledsoe minutes late in the season when he could have been developing young guys? Because that's the only thing I can think of where the philosophy would differ in a way that you didn't expect.
This is where David Griffin, who is very good at having press conferences, you know, the image starts to fall apart once you really try and understand what he's saying. In the moment, it sounds really good, right? And then you start to think about it a little bit more, and I do feel this theory falls apart. Look, I think Stan Van Gundy lost the locker room. He graded on some people, and they just decided this isn't the guy we want to work with. This isn't going to be the head coach going forward. Difference of philosophy is kind of surprising, right? I've seen a report out there that maybe it was that he played Eric Bledsoe too much, and the front office wanted him to try and develop the young talent more. We also heard David Griffin come out and say they're not just going to give young guys minutes. They want them to earn those minutes. So it seems like he might have been on the same page with Stan Van Gundy when it came to Eric Bledsoe, right? I think that's where we run into some of the problems. And some of the times you look at David Griffin and it feels like a car salesman or something like that, that there's not a whole lot of meaning or action behind the words that he's saying. Look, this wasn't the right fit. It's okay to just say it wasn't a good coach. He didn't do a great job here. We've decided to move on. But I think in trying to be maybe a little bit more diplomatic, some of that kind of gets lost in there and makes him sound kind of foolish to a certain degree. He didn't want to really slander Stan Van Gundy in this media availability, and I get it. You don't want to say bad things about the guy. But at the same point, you kind of fired him, and that says a whole lot about it too.
Now, you know, Jake, when you think about, Pels fans, can we hit the lottery? I mean, I think we're going to pick number 10. So what is your take on that? Because to me, lightning struck twice when you're able to get Anthony Davis and you got Zion when you consider the odds going against you. So as far as that goes, when you look at the draft, is that something when you look at the 10th pick, 60% plus, I want to say, in that realm to get that? But and it seems like it'll go back to normal as far as maybe having a training camp and a traditional NBA season, considering that what we expected pre-COVID to go forward. Just break that down.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a regular NBA season next year, it sounds like. They'll have training camp, they'll have more preseason, they'll have time to kind of all get on the same page. So whatever head coach they decide to go with is going to have an inherent advantage over what Stan Van Gundy dealt with last season. And look, I think they realize this roster is not good enough to really do damage in the playoffs. And I don't think the expectation for them next season is going to simply be get into the postseason. through the play-in tournament or something like that. You know, the 10th seed, the 9th seed, even the 7th seed or the 8th seed isn't going to be good enough for the Pelicans next year. I think they're going to be looking to make a significant jump, and you've got to do that with a lot of roster turnover. Some lottery luck will help you. They have about a 20% chance to get a top four pick, a 4.5% chance at the number one overall pick, but you can get maybe trade that 10th pick, even if you end up staying pat there, for some player that can really help you next season. So I expect there's going to be a lot of roster turnover, and that's just going to make the job probably a little bit easier for the new head coach coming in.
Talking with Jake Madison of the Locked On Pelicans podcast, and put on your GM hat for a second. What free agent would you most want to bring in here that you think could really help this roster?
You know, it's going to be interesting, right? Because there's not a real deep free agent class here. There's not really any difference makers out there that the Pelicans are going to be able to try and bring in. So what they need to look for is just those role players who, in the right situation, maybe getting more minutes, can really try and step up. You're kind of looking in a way for diamonds in the rough, and I think that's what the Pelicans are going to have to do. Keep an eye on a guy like Doug McDermott. It's a three-point shooter from the Indiana Pacers. He can shoot in as a spot-up shooter, but also off the dribble. Gives you an extra threat to put out there next to Zion Williamson, a guy that can make teams pay when you double or triple Zion Williamson. I think those are the type of additions they're going to need to get, but really it's going to be the trade market where they try and make the biggest splash. So whether that's a guy like CJ McCollum from the Portland Trailblazers, maybe even looking to bring back Buddy Hield from the Sacramento Kings, adding more scoring and off-the-bounce kind of guy, I think that's going to be the most important thing that the Pelicans could add.
Now, you know, Jake, explain this to the fans, because what in the hell this means? I mean, because you look, we kind of understand the NFL draft. And look, a second round pick in the NFL was significant. The second round pick, you're basically hitting the lottery if that player is truly significant. They might make the roster, you plug and play. But what is your take that when I look, Mr. Griffin, is that all of a sudden 11 first-round picks over the next 7 years. What the hell that means? I mean, a casual fan, they can't even grasp that. What does that mean, 11 first-round picks over the next 7 years? I know it's dealing with the Lakers' success and all that, but they can't even wrap their head around that.
What it probably means in the simplest terms is more trade ammunition. I doubt they end up making the majority of those picks out there. I think they're going to end up trading a lot of this to really try and reshape the roster and build a winner around Zion Williamson much quicker and try and bring in established NBA guys that know how to go out and win and that are good fits and the right complementary pieces. They might end up making some of these selections, I think, and you need to do that in a small market because
right.
You need rookies that are cheap guys that overperform their contracts, so you're kind of playing the value game more than anything else since you're not really capable of attracting big-name free agents here. But I think most of those picks are going to end up being traded away, probably starting as soon as this offseason once we get the draft lottery set next week.
Now, Jake, when you're looking at the postseason now, I don't know – I can't recall any past seasons that we paying particularly attention. Man, everybody's freaking hurt, like all the injuries, significant injuries to maybe favorites. I mean, have you witnessed any postseason maybe in the past in the NBA? Okay, is he healthy or is he not healthy? I'm talking about whether you look at the Nets, you look what happened with the Lakers. I mean, you could go on and on. I even look at the Jazz. With Mitchell and all that. So what is your take? Clippers, you go on and on, but it's like, man, who's healthy and who's, you know, you're helping you well, but who's well right now?
Look, no one is. And look, every NBA season, you know, the postseason comes around and there's injuries and it can kind of swing the balance of power into the finals or towards one team and away from another team. And so ultimately, it does always kind of come down to the best team that's the healthiest, I think is a good way to kind of describe what you see in the NBA playoffs. But given the condensed season, playing a game basically every other day, you're really starting to see fatigue take a toll on many of these NBA players and these stars. And yeah, it's not been easy. And it could be one of those things where the healthiest team is truly going to be the NBA champion, but over the course of the whole year, they weren't actually the best team. And that might be what we're seeing, but that's how it goes, right? You know, when the Toronto Raptors won their title, there was no Kevin Durant, there was no Klay Thompson for that Golden State Warriors team. It's just kind of a part of it. It's how it goes.
And it is what it is.
Kind of great equalizer, you know. You can only play the team in front of you, right? No matter who they have or don't have on their roster.
Speaking of Kevin Durant, did he elevate his reputation and his legacy night with that performance?
Unbelievable performance. That is an all-time game. That is a legacy-defining game, and it's made even more impressive. One, by the fact that James Harden just looked like a shell of himself, 1 for 10 from the field, but Kevin Durant putting in 49 points and playing all 48 minutes of that game. He didn't come out of the game. He played every single second of that game to basically crush the hopes and dreams of the Milwaukee Bucks.
Well, they looked dead to rights. And you know, Jake, like you said, Kevin Durant, okay, I trust other players, you know, you're competing against. And you look at LeBron, you look at everybody. And when the Greek Freak said, that Kevin Durant's the greatest player right now in the world, and we just have to hope he missed his shots. What? I mean, and that's an MVP-type candidate up there, the Greek Freak, and that's what he's saying about Kevin Durant.
It was that kind of performance from him. I know a lot of people have focused on what the Bucks should have done defensively. Should they have tried double-teaming Kevin Durant? Should they tried of having Giannis defend him? They did neither of those two things. I don't know if that would have mattered. That was an all-time game from maybe one of the greatest scorers we've seen in NBA history. They weren't going to be able to stop him no matter what. So partially what Giannis says is right, but still, if you're a Bucks fan, you don't like hearing the two-time MVP saying something like that. When Giannis had a pretty subpar game, and really still at times could have taken it over and won it. I don't know what he was trying to do offensively. He was trying to do a Kevin Durant impression, but the real Kevin Durant is the better guy to have that kind of style of play. And I ultimately think that's what caused the Bucks to lose. But that was an all-time game. And when we look back at Kevin Durant's Hall of Fame career, that might be one of the first things that people point to.
Jake Madison, always appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, you guys.
Tell everybody real quick, where can they get the Locked On Pelicans podcast?
Yeah, Locked On Pelicans podcast. It's Monday through Friday, 5 days a week, a new podcast every single day, breaking down everything you want to know about this team. Get it wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, the Odyssey app as well. It's there. Just search Locked On Pelicans.
It's an excellent piece of audio. I listen to it as often as I can. Thanks so much for joining us, Jake. We appreciate it.
Of course, thanks for having me on, you guys.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.